This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance and Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm actor and comedian Griffin Newman.
And I'm film critic David Sim.
Together, we host Blank Check, a movie podcast where week by week we overanalyze directors' complete filmographies.
In each new series, we discuss filmmakers who experience early success and are issued a series of blank checks by Hollywood to make their own crazy passion projects.
Now, sometimes those checks clear and sometimes they bounce, baby.
We're joined each week by incredible guests, including actors, writers, and directors. So you can follow Blank Check with Griffin and David on Spotify for new episodes every Sunday.
The year is 2022. And in this year, we have watched 49 movies for consideration for this unspooled season 3 finale. What's going to space? Rocket boosters engaged. Let's find out. Everyone, and welcome to
Unspooled
Season Wrap Up.
You know, Amy, it seems like only yesterday I was standing in a closet in some house that was not my own, recording the very first episode after we had finished the AFI list. And look at us now. 3 years later, I would say we've done about, probably in that time, at least 150 movies. I'm not going to count. I'm sure someone can count, but I would say in that range.
And I don't know how to count. What's the point of counting?
But with those 150 and the 100 that we did on the AFI list, that is 250 movies. We have a list right now, an AFI list of 40 films. These are 40 films that we are sending into outer space. You can check them out on unspooledpod.com.
And last year, we added about a dozen films to the list. You, the listeners, made a strong, agitated case that we needed to put the thing on the list.
Mm-hmm.
And we listened. Your things.
So currently the API list, that's the Amy and Paul Institute list, that's the list of films that we are considering to send to outer space, is at 58 films. I won't go over all the 58 films. They're on unspooledpod.com. You can take a look there. And today we are going to add some more to this list and maybe even take some off that API list. That's part of the game. That's part of the fun. We don't know what we're adding yet. But we have gone about this in the most, I would say, judicious way. We both got sent our lists of every film that we've done. And our producer, Josh, said pick 12. We could only pick 12. So we were confined. So, Josh, tell us how you went about doing this.
Yeah, so this is going to work really similar to how we did the season 2 finale last year, where Paul, Amy, you guys each sent me 12 films, from your picks to go to space from the last like 50 or so films, the last year of movies that we've done. So we put that into a spreadsheet, and you guys are about to find out. You guys are going to look at it for the first time live on the air, which movies you agree should go to space, and which movies you disagree on whether they should go to space or not. And me and Devin sent some picks in as well that you might hear.
Okay, I'm very excited.
Wait, Josh, I mean, as the mastermind, how do we do? Are we like in perfect synergy, me and Paul, because we get along on everything?
You were in precisely imperfect synergy in the sense that 6 movies you guys agree should be sent to space.
Oh, look
and
at
then
us.
Each of you also picked 6 other movies that you each, that one of you wanted to send to space and the other one did not.
I like that. All right, so a half and half. I will say this list was really, really hard. in the 2 years that we have done this, maybe three, because we've done this three times, it's been easier. This was legit hard for me to figure out what I wanted to do, how I wanted to balance it. I made some rash decisions, so I probably can be swayed a little bit.
Oh, good to know, rubbing my hands excitedly.
But I also feel like, you know, there are some movies that I have some second thoughts about. And we want to hear from you, because last year, you also played a part in adding films to the list. So we're going to hear from our producers, Devin and Josh. We're going to hear from Amy and I. And at the end of this episode, you can tell us where we might have missed the boat, what you want on this API list. And at the end, we may have 68 films on this list. We may. Or we may have less. We don't know.
Yeah. And actually, now that I think about it, last year, the listeners also were like, you dummies, how dare you not put the 400 Blows on the list? It made such a strong campaign that we added that too.
Yes.
So I'm excited to get yelled at, and I'm excited to bicker with you, my beloved movie bicker partner.
I love it. And I saw a tweet this week from somebody who listens to the show, and they said, I just can't figure the two of you out, and maybe that's why I love this show. So I think this is going to be one of those episodes. But I will tell you this. Just to put it in contention before we start, Dr. Strangelove, Double Indemnity, Raising Arizona, The Royal Tenenbaums, and Inception are all films that are on this list, our current API list, that we have said could be replaced with another Nolan, another Wes Anderson, another Kubrick film noir, whatever we want to do. Those were films that we had put there simply as a placeholder, because we're trying to be... Yeah, look, it's an impossible task, 100 films, but we want to just put those out there. So especially I think this comes up in this episode in a big way. So shall we look at our agreements?
All right, I'm going to click this open button.
All right,
button.
I'm looking.
Here
All right, you want to just go one by one? I'm just looking at them right now. All right, yeah. This is good. All right.
All right,
here we go.
First film we agree on.
I'm very excited about this. First one we agree on, I thought this is the easiest one of the bunch to pick. The Matrix. Matrix is going to space.
Matrix is going to space.
No doubt about it.
It makes perfect sense. Absolutely perfect sense. The Matrix, it felt like, it felt significant. It felt beautiful. It felt exciting watching it all over again. It feels like a film beamed into us from the future.
Yes.
May as well just beam it right back out, man.
I love it.
And now Keanu's going to space. Oh, Keanu.
We love it. He's in space. And now, Amy, the next one that is going on the list.
The Night of the Hunter. Oh, I'm excited about that one. The recent one that we just did that, like, we loved. Listeners absolutely loved. One of the hands on the main villain also loved. The other hand hated it. What are you going to do? What are we going to do? It's a beautiful movie. I mean, it has every... For me, this was like a no-brainer, because not only is it like creepy, beautiful, magical, everything that I love about like a person who makes films, that a person could just make one film this amazing and then drop the mic and walk off and never make another film again. I mean, that's the kind of movie story I love.
I agree.
But also it had the aesthetics of silent cinema that I just adore and that I'm always agitating for very loudly on this list. I mean, it's a beautiful no-brainer. Absolute no-brainer. And to have Lillian Gish, beloved Lillian Gish.
Perfect. I mean, now this next one might be one of those films that we put on this list and we might put it as a placeholder, because we haven't done a lot of this director. But to me, when I looked at every film that we did this year, it was again another no-brainer. P.T. Anderson's Boogie Nights. Classic movie, great performances. Epic. And we did a lot of epics this year. A lot of big movies that span not only a long runtime, but also a large period of time. I love this movie. I think it is, in ways, an intensely personal film. I also think it's a movie that's about Hollywood. We talk a lot about that, especially as it comes up in other directors' work. But I think this is a movie, and I love P.T. Anderson movies. I love them. But this one kind of just checks all the boxes. I think you would be hard-pressed to find someone who doesn't think that Boogie Nights is in the top two of P.T. Anderson's films. I think that I would stand by that.
Yeah,
and I'm saying there might be a close distinction between 3 and 4 or 2 and 3, but this one is in the top two.
I mean, I'm with you. This is my favorite P.T. Anderson film. I know that there's so much love out there for There Will Be Blood.
Sure.
I also deeply love Magnolia. That's a film that Magnolia feels very close to my spine. And I want us to be able to talk about Magnolia. And I would even want us to talk about There Will Be Blood, a movie that I feel like maybe on my fourth watch, I'll come around on it. We'll see. Maybe not. But for me, Boogie Nights is the standard bearer. I just think it has all the heart and the humor and the soul and the depth and the sadness. Like it is an everything movie in every single way.
I mean, I also want to just, I'd make an argument for Phantom Thread too, which I really love.
I was almost going to jump in and just say, obligatory, I have to say how much I love Phantom Thread.
I mean, Phantom Thread is amazing. That's our producer, Devin. But yes, I mean, so P.T. Anderson, that's a debate that we can continue to have. It's our first P.T. Anderson. So it goes on the list. Easy peasy. So far, I'm looking at the 6 right now. I haven't looked at where we disagree yet, but the 6 are, I'm going across the board, all on board with. The next one, Amy?
The next one is the last film we just did, The Dark Knight. We just closed out season 3 with this one.
Spent 2 hours chatting about it.
2 hours chatting about it. And, as a person who is very tough on this genre that we call the superhero franchise, this transcends all of that. This film, mm-hmm. I think, is just spectacular. Like, every single time I watch this film, I am completely excited by every single element of it, from, the acting, the prediction, to the storytelling, to the ideas. It's a masterful film, and I am... If we put this on, this will be our first superhero film on the list.
Well, then, if we put this on, can we take off Inception?
Yes.
I agree. Done.
All right. Done.
Done.
Goodbye, Inception.
All You're right.
Nice knowing
you.
Shake your hand. Adios.
All right.
Let the building fold in on you on your way out.
We will now have another one of these kind of debates, because we last put on the list the Royal Tenenbaums in the last season of the show. And this time we have picked definitively in our top 6 that the Grand Budapest Hotel should be on our list. Now, I mean, I love the Grand Budapest Hotel. I think we talked about this movie, and rewatching it, I hadn't really taken a moment to watch or think about that film after I saw it in the theater. But rewatching it with you, it does feel to me like it captures everything that is unique, interesting, and distinctive about Wes Anderson in a beautiful package. I have a real soft spot for Royal Tenenbaums because I just love the actors in it. But I think if we're talking about the Wes Anderson film, I don't think that there is, I don't think there's any argument. I love Rushmore. I love Tenenbaums. But this movie, and I would love to talk about Rushmore on this show, and I think we will. But this movie, I can easily make peace with, that's the one that goes.
I'm so happy to hear you say that.
Yeah.
That makes me just blessed, because I felt like I didn't know if I could sway you onto Team Grand Budapest Hotel because your love of Tenenbaums is so strong.
I do love it so much. And I think what I realized is I love the performances in Tenenbaum. I think I love the movie of Grand Budapest Hotel. I think I just love the way it looks. And that to me has become a more distinctive feature of Wes Anderson. Like, the Wes Anderson of Bottle Rocket is kind of on one side and the Grand Budapest Hotel is on the other side. There's a lot of similarities there too, but that's kind of the Wes Anderson I first fell in love with. And Rushmore, there are elements, but it's definitely transformed. And I think he's taken, again, performances here are amazing. It's kind of everything. It's like we just talked about with P.T. Anderson. It's the whole thing. It's the whole Katamari.
Yeah.
Can I ask you to remember this rationalization for later?
I will. I will.
The concept of the super Wes Anderson. Let's remember that for later. Let's put that to the side.
I have a feeling. In my gut, I know why you're saying that. I don't know officially, but yes, I don't.
Why are you saying? I guess
no. Just table it for later. It's not my time yet.
All right, great. I can't wait. Very excited.
But let me just at this moment say, as a huge fan of Royal Tenenbaums, I kind of agree with you on this one.
Okay, yeah, right.
Royal Tenenbaums is my personal favorite, but I would be hard-pressed to argue that Grand Budapest doesn't kind of pull it all together for him. So, you know.
This time last year, I was arguing for Royal Tenenbaums to be the Wes Anderson pick, and the episode we did on Grand Budapest really swayed me, and also rewatching the film really swayed
me.
I think I'm officially on this team.
I love this. Maybe I can get the whole world now to come around on the French Dispatch in a couple of years. I don't think the French Dispatch should replace this, but I do think it's a really wonderful film.
I just think that there's something really interesting also about the time that you see these films. And that's something I'm always wrestling with, too. It's like we talked about that last year or maybe 2 years ago. Like a movie like Dazed and Confused was a movie that means a lot to me because of when I saw it. And I think that I'm trying to do with this show is look at it from a little bit more of a analytical way. Not, you know, there's emotion, but it's a little bit more like I'm just trying to, you know, I'm trying to be, you know, the API list has a strong standard, you know, so we have to hold ourselves to that. But we're going to have a lot more arguing. We don't have to go into why we agree so much because we have one more film that we definitely agree on.
Yeah. And I have to say, talking about emotion, this is one of the films that I have argued about the most in my own personal life with people as an enemy of this film, as an antagonist towards this film. My boyfriend and I did a whole podcast yelling at each other about this movie. And my boyfriend and I, God bless him, most wonderful man who's ever walked the earth, I've tried to talk about in couples therapy why I don't like Blade Runner. So like this is our relationship. But we have gotten into many fights over the years over Grease, a film that he loves, and our episode on it this year finally turned me around on that film.
Wow.
I've always felt out of step not getting it, and now the world has been opened. Grease is the word.
I love this idea because this is a movie that I wrestled with too. I was like, does it belong on the list? And why I put it on the list was twofold. I thought our conversation about it was really good. And it's a movie that I would put on the list with the idea being for now. But I really liked our conversation. Our conversation made me enjoy all the pieces of it more. I don't know though, if it's perfect, I'm tabling that for now. Like in my mind, I'm just going off of what we unpacked was a greater movie than I assumed was there.
And that's how I feel exactly too. I think for years I have considered this the movie where a girl has to wear black leather pants in order to be cool. And our conversation about it really broke it open for me.
Yes.
And it changed. It completely changed. And it became a much deeper film that I just wanted to talk about forever. And I've never felt that way about Grease before.
All right.
I mean, granted, I will yell to the heavens that I think the John Waters hairspray might be better. But maybe that'll come later. Maybe we'll do that one.
I will say this point on Grease quickly, which is, you know, the original AFI 100 had a lot of musicals on it, but the current API list only has The Wizard of Oz, Singing in the Rain, and Cabaret as musicals currently. This would up that quotient significantly, but maybe even that, it's just like, it could be Grease with an asterisk. It could just be like, we want to have another musical in here. This is the best other musical we've covered so far.
Well, now we have set up all of our agreements. I want to call out that Josh and Devin also agreed with us on The Matrix, Night of the Hunter, and Boogie Nights. But that is...
Yeah.
That's it.
Those are the three we were all completely in sync.
Yes. Josh also... in agreement that The Dark Knight and Grand Budapest Hotel needs to be on the list, as well as Grease. So Josh, very much on the same wavelength. And we'll get into all of our disagreements, because there's a lot. There's a lot coming up.
I am not surprised that Devin is the enemy of the people.
The enemy of the people?
There's a lot of wrestling going on here. I think the one that we should discuss first, in my mind, is the Verhoeven, right? Let's talk about that, because we talked about Verhoeven twice, back to back. We talked about RoboCop and Starship Troopers. I had a hard time, and really it was a coin flip for me in what to pick. I picked Starship Troopers.
And I picked RoboCop.
I think I can be swayed in either direction. I felt like at the end of our conversation, we were like, oh, Starship Troopers is like, I got to do everything I wanted to do. And then there's a part of me that felt like, well, RoboCop was also like, oh, wow, you subverted the form. Now, I will say that Devin picked RoboCop and Josh picked Starship Troopers. So we're exactly split.
Yeah.
Everybody picked it Verhoeven, but it completely split the show.
I love that we are at least united in the fact that Verhoeven needs to be on this list.
Definitely.
100%. I would love to hear from you because, like I said, I could be swayed. I think that where I locked into Starship Troopers was the scope and the style and the subversiveness of it. And just like Grease, it's a movie that appears one way, but is very different. And I think that it's a very smart movie and it was very, very ahead of its time. So I thought there was a lot of great things in it. And again, master at the top of his craft. That's where I was focusing, knowing that RoboCop is also a fantastic film. But yeah, who the RoboCop fans, I would say, tell me what you're thinking about RoboCop.
Well, I mean, to me, what I was thinking is RoboCop, I would say, is the most holistically, perfectly executed of the two, where like it is exactly what it wants to say. It does the thing. Like if it set out to get an A on the test, it gets an A on the test of making his point about like business and commerce and military policing and pain and human suffering. Like it does everything it sets out to do. Starship Troopers is trickier because I think it's more ambitious. It's more of a fuck you. It's more everything. And like there is a part of my brain that is also very swayable because I will love an ambitious failure more than almost anything. You know, ambitious failures, directors who are like reaching so high, mean the world to me. So there's a part of me that really wants to, that was really torn on this the same way that you were, because I think that Starship Troopers was trickier for people to get, you know, and threw a lot of people off the scent. And I love that about it. Like I love it as a prank. And I love RoboCop as a perfect film. So that's kind of where I'm at with it. I'm very swayable.
I mean, Josh, Devin, what do you think? Yeah. I mean, you've heard us talk about it. Like,
go for Starship Troopers, Josh.
Yeah, I mean, Starship Troopers is just one of like the greatest works of satire of all time. It's just one of the most perfect. Like, we're not going to just like, you know, make fun or poke at an opposing viewpoint. We're going to completely inhabit it and make an entire movie from that viewpoint.
It's better than Strangelove in your mind?
Well, interesting you say that, because if you look for, I mean, we'll get to my thoughts on Strangelove probably later in this episode, I think.
Yes.
But I think in terms of just being like a perfectly realized film and one of the best films about fascism ever made, also just like a great action movie, just a really fun, really well executed. I rewatched this movie a couple months ago. The effects are fantastic. It completely holds up. It's so watchable, and it's you can get it on multiple levels. It is Verhoeven's masterpiece.
Okay, so two things. Starship Troopers is excellent. I mean, it's just great. You definitely, I could be swayed either way as well. I would say in favor of RoboCop, people got it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
This to me says that there is something about the making of RoboCop that just nailed what it was going for perfectly. Starship Troopers took some years to uncover. Now, you could argue it either way. Maybe Starship Troopers is smarter, and that's why it was harder for people to kind of understand what it was trying to do and where it was coming from. But to me, that's why RoboCop is the one to pick. I mean,
but you could also say that the majority of the AFI list are films that people didn't get at first, like The Wizard of Oz and all these. Yeah, these movies that come back, right?
No, I totally agree. The second thing I would say, though, is that RoboCop is all that, and it's very funny. And it's very funny, and it's this action movie, and it's one of the most violent movies ever made, and yet it's hysterical. There's so much going on in RoboCop. I just, revisiting it for the show, coming back to it after a very long time away, I was like, this is perfect movie. It just really works for me. I think Starship Troopers is great. I think RoboCop is the masterpiece.
Well, can I say something about this, and maybe this is feel free to disagree with me, but I think that RoboCop is a perfect American film.
Right.
And I think, because I think it does talk a lot about policing, the way that there is, the way that we see our society, government, and it's a very, it's very much like a foreigner's view of how we have law and order. And I think that that's actually really interesting.
Yeah.
Whereas Starship Troopers, I think, talks a lot more about a worldwide phenomenon, like, you know, this idea of, you know, organizing large groups of people, you know, like, and by the way, I don't know if that makes it, so there is, that's the reason why I think I really relate to RoboCop, because I'm like, oh, wow, what a beautiful and smart takedown of, you know, corporate America and policing and everything that happened since that movie in 1987, in many ways, without a man in a robot suit, has come true. You know, there's this, like, you know, like, yeah, you know, there's like, there's
ironically, there is more humanity in RoboCop. I think Starship Troopers is kind of just a fuck you, but it's a perfectly executed fuck you.
It is. Yeah. Totally. We have not agreed on, I know, come to any understanding here whatsoever.
No, I know. Well, I think that they're both really good movies. It's a hard, yeah, it's like, it's a fine line, I think, to pull. And I think in my mind, I was thinking that Starship Troopers is, going back to that idea, is that the masterpiece? Is that the fully realized version of this director, right? Is this, like, is that him getting
kind of in
everything?
The way you were saying about Wes Anderson?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's true. Is it the leap? Is it similar to that same leap? You know, like, that, well, you love, again, Royal Tenenbaums, but there's... Yeah,
for P.T. Anderson, though, we are kind of saying that Boogie Nights is the one kind of with the most energy out of the gate, is maybe the one that is going to sustain. So we're kind of looking at it from either direction. So that's not necessarily a yardstick,
right,
we can,
because,
use to solve this question. Yeah.
Because I do think that, like, Starship Troopers has been a movie that has, like you said, it's come back and into the culture. So I wonder if maybe this is a decision that we leave for our listeners. Because I think this is like, I'm happy with either one. I don't think, I'm not going to lose respect or think one is less. I'm just really split. For me, I'm just really split on that one.
Yeah.
I feel exactly the same way. I mean, I think this is when we do need to phone a friend. And by friend, I mean everybody listening. Because, yeah.
We need more input, like Johnny Five.
Yeah, we got to get Johnny Five in there.
Where is Short Circuit? Oh, my God.
We got to get, well, at least one of them on there.
Yeah, one of the two.
All right. Well, you know what, Amy? You know, we did talk a lot about superheroes in this series that we just did this last year. We talked about heroes and villains, and there were a few different types of superheroes. We already talked about how we are putting The Dark Knight on the list, but you and I both picked two other superhero films.
We did. Yes. A second superhero film.
Yes. So talk about what you picked.
Yeah. I picked the OG 1978 Superman because I just think that film has so much heart and so much soul. I am completely obsessed every single time I watch that movie with Margot Kidder and her Lois Lane, and just the vibe that she brings to that film, the sharpness, the funniness, the toughness, the fact that this movie is so epic in scale in a way that I tend to forget until I sit down and watch it again. Like the 45 minutes, nearly an hour that we spend on Krypton with Marlon Brando, the glowing suits, you know, the real tragedy of like watching them put their young son in the spaceship and blast off, like the gravitas that this film has. I feel like it enters like it is a film that thinks it's going to change the film landscape forever. And I think in so many ways it did, and people couldn't match it. Like the perfect casting of Christopher Reeve as Superman, I don't know that any film has cast a super character that well until something like Heath Ledger in The Joker. Like, he just is that character in a way that I think haunted him for the rest of his career. But he brings the sweetness, the toughness, the taking a guy's gun and bending it in half, the everything. And, like, I am just sucked into this movie every single time, especially when, like, Superman is flying through the air with Lois Lane and she's talking to him and she's saying, like, just saying all of these thoughts and wondering if he can read her mind. And it is so romantic. Like, I think part of my problem with most superhero movies is they're lacking either brains or a soul, or both, usually. And this one has both of them. And so to me, the first one out of the gate did it the best.
Oh, sorry, were you talking about Iron Man? Because
so
what you just said could have been A full-throated endorsement for Iron Man. Let me say,
is no soul in a Robert Downey Jr. Iron Man. That guy
I totally disagree with that.
I wouldn't go that far.
They're going to make him cry in the last
Iron
movie
Man
and be
two,
like,
yes.
Oh, I could have had a daughter. No, come on. The guy is Iron all, two, he's a quip machine. The guy is like one of those buttons that you see at Hot Topic that tells you it's stupid.
That's on the surface. That's like the Bruce Wayne character that Tony Stark is playing. Yes, yes. I don't think the romance between Pepper Potts and Tony Stark is as good as the one depicted between Margot Kidder and Christopher Reeve.
But Thor: Love and Thunder, let's talk about that.
Now, Superman is the one that Amy and I agreed on. I will say, I think everything she just said is absolutely 100% true, and I would add Gene Hackman as Lex Luthor, and Miss Tessmacher, and Ned Beatty. I mean, just... every little element that is in that movie, apart from even just Superman and Lois Lane, is so good. It's exciting. The music's great. Every character is awesome. It's funny. It is really romantic and a little bit sexy. You kind of love Christopher Reeve and Lois Lane. You want them to get together. It's like, I can feel that even now watching it. I'm like, oh, these two. You get a little like hearts in your eyes for it. I love that movie. I agree with Amy. I don't think it's really been beaten.
Okay. Here's what I'm going to say about this, because I truly love Superman. I am a Superman stan. I love Superman 1 and Superman 2. I am not only a Superman fan, I'm a Richard Donner fan. So I'm going to lead with my first thought, which is there probably is a better Richard Donner picture to go on this list.
If you say Goonies, I'm getting off this
I wouldn't say Goonies, but I think that there's a better Richard Donner movie. I think there might be. I don't want to get into that conversation because that may pull us down a road. I think that we talk about this a lot on this show. Set the tone, set the model. And I think a lot of people have gone forward and done very interesting versions using that model. And I think you could make a really interesting argument for Tim Burton's first Batman. I think you can make an argument again for Robert Downey. Like the romance may not be there, but there's been a lot of DNA out there for great superhero movies that have that. This set the tone. Obviously it set the tone. I think it looks great. I love the purity of it. People haven't really been able to crack Superman, but I do think people have been able to crack a superhero movie. We're in a glut of them right now. So there was a part of me, and this is why I chose something different. This is my two came down to this. Because I love, and believe me, I have all these movies in them. Every version that came out, I got them all. So you don't have to convince me it's a great movie. I know it's a great movie. But I thought, if we're talking about movies that really made a difference in the superhero genre, and I'm going to put Matrix as a superhero movie too, to a certain extent, I'm going to say it's Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. And the reason why is because just like Superman, that movie redefined something in a really interesting way. It kind of took animation to a different level. It paid an homage to comic books. I think it does have heart. I think it does have these really cool concepts. I think it made us look at animation differently. And I think everything that you've seen since has an influence of this movie. And I think Spider-Man, there's a ton of Spider-Man movies and a lot of great Spider-Man movies. But this one, in this moment, I was like, wow, that may be just looking at from a technical and everything you said, casting, emotional, it worked for me. I'm like, that to me may be more interesting. We don't have that many animated films on this list. That's a little bit more adult. That's a little bit more interesting. So that's where I have my push-pull of Spider-Man versus Superman. I was like, I think I'd be remiss if I didn't put on something that figured out how to break the genre, not just by putting a character that curses or making it super violent. It was like, oh no, we made a movie that looks different, feels different, pays an homage to where it came from, but also had everything that we like. And also, I think in many ways has done the multiverse the best out of anybody. So that's where I landed on Spider-Man.
I'm going to have to disagree with the last thing that you're saying, because I don't think anybody else does it as well. And I mean, sure, there's like superhero movies that share like Superman's DNA, but we're talking like limping mutant things that might have a couple fragments
Tim
of the
Burton's
DNA,
Batman,
but are not as
not
good
that.
As that thing. Well, I love
Matrix,
Tim Burton's Batman.
Not as good as that.
I love Tim Burton's Batman, but here's my argument. We're clearly not going to put Tim Burton's Batman on this list if we have The Dark Knight on the list. Maybe. And I would say if we're doing a Burton, I would probably rather do Edward Scissorhands. Mm-hmm. That might be my pick.
There's so many interesting ones in that era.
Well, I would pick one of the pure Burtons over the Batman anyways. So to me, that part of the argument is moot. But I will agree with you that I love the animation in Spider-Verse. I think it's super exciting. I think it's super cool. It doesn't pain me to imagine a world where this movie is on the list. But when it comes down to when it came down to the two, it was very clearly Superman for me.
I love Spider-Verse. My struggle with it is I'm not even sure it's the best Spider-Man movie. And if we ever do one of the Raimis, I could see it getting on there.
Yeah. I definitely thought of the two as like it was one or the other for my list. It was either Spider-Verse or Superman, which speaks to how much I love Spider-Verse. I saw that in the theater. I can remember I went with my stepmom when I was home for Christmas the year that came out. And she was like, oh, let's go see this. I was like, hey, it should probably be fun. Like, legitimately a half hour into it, just jaw on the ground. I was like, what am I even looking at? This is incredible. Like, just in terms of spectacle, that movie's astounding. And the art behind it is incredible. I think Superman, I don't know. It's magic. It's a magical movie.
I definitely don't disagree with it. Like, I can't really argue against Superman. I'm putting a fake fight up between these two movies.
Right.
And I'm saying, well, both of these movies did something the first, right? Like, mm-hmm. I think that Bob Parrishetti, Peter Ramsey, and Rodney Rothman, you know, did the same thing. I know it's tricky.
Let me muddy the waters even more, though, then, because I agree with you that we do need more animation on this list. However, there's an animated film I put on the list that you did not. That is also brilliantly experimental, changed the game, changed the way people thought of it. And you could even argue is maybe a little bit of a superhero story too. I guess. And that's Akira. You did not put Akira on your list.
No, because so many people agreed with me that it was overrated. It was a movie that I thought I was going to be eaten alive by social media in the world. And it really, I think what I came to realize with Akira, and this is actually something that I don't feel with Superman, but it was of its time. And when you saw it and the emotional attachment that you had to it, I am blown away by it. I respect it. I think it's amazing. I wonder if it's worthy. I mean, I know everyone's like, of course, you got to put Akira on that list. But is there better films in that genre? I don't know. I think there might be.
There's a lot of anime that we do have left to explore. Although I will say, weirdly, you know, I've told you that I have the world's most boring dreams on the planet. Most of my dreams are like, I'm trying to look up something on my phone and my thumbs don't work and I'm just mistyping things. And they're the worst dreams ever. Hate them. But last night, maybe because of this conversation, I had a dream that I was late to go to the radio this morning. And I was like speeding on a motorcycle to get there on the 101. And I did an Akira slide in my dream, which makes I've never done anything that badass in a dream in my life. I also had cell phone dreams last night, but I had that one too. And maybe that is the God saying I at least need to put up some sort of a fight.
Well, no, I appreciate that. I want to also talk about one other thing too, which is representation, right? Like that's something that I think is important on this list that we make. You know, like I think a lot of the times when you think of superheroes, you think of white people for the most part. Like, yes, there's been Black Panther. There are, in the last couple of years, there's been a push, yes, to start to be like, let's see faces that are recognizable to our entire culture. I also think that, you know, when we are making this list, like how many white heroes do we need? And not that this is a back to the Superman argument versus the Spider-Man argument. Akira is not a white face, but it's I do think it's important to think about that, too, in the grand scheme of we only are having limited things. And I am making an argument that The Matrix and Superman are very similar in the sense of it's, you know, it's a hero origin story. And I think, you know, that one is pushing, you know, it's hard. It's hard to make these distinctions because we are dealing in the same landscape, essentially. I mean, how different can you make a superhero origin story? I mean, that's a big debate. Like even Josh was saying, like, are there better Spider-Man movies? There might be. But
Well, yeah, I was talking to Grant Morrison this week on stage because Grant, you know, the great comic book writer, has a new novel coming out called Luda that's about like the flattening of like gender and identity. And Grant was saying that they think they've come to the end of the idea of the heroic journey. Why do stories have to fit in this template of the heroic journey? And what's next after that? Because it is a story model that I think is incredibly limiting. And we see it over and over and over and over again. And, you know, I think Star Wars did more than any film to like ground it into the firmament of how we tell stories and what we think a big movie is supposed to look like. And I agree with you. I would love to break past this because it's just a very European way of telling stories that I'm bored with.
And well, I would also argue that that's what Spider-Verse does. They kind of it's a meta like idea. It is an origin story, but it's like kind of wrapped in they deconstruct it while also like playing into everything that we expect and then subverting it, like without undercutting it. This is an interesting conversation because I'm not just saying like, well, just because it's different, it needs to be on there. But I do think it is important for us to be like thinking about these movies, and these are hard. This is a hard list. Let's just put a pin in some of this stuff. We can come back because I think it's tough to debate unless we're giving up things, but let's maybe see.
Before we move off animation and representation, my 13th cut was Porco Rosso, and I couldn't ultimately justify it, but I do strongly think a Miyazaki needs to be on this list.
I do too.
Probably not.
For sure. Yeah.
I do too. I'm glad we did Porco Rosso.
Yeah, I love Porco Rosso. I think it's just not the one.
Yeah, it was clear we need to do more. I mean, the audience, they were happy to hear us talk about it. And I really think that's a cool movie. And it was, I love that conversation you guys had about it. But it's clear we have to do a couple more for sure.
Absolutely. So this is a very, this is a thorny subject. And by the way, I'm also open to putting a few more on the list and coming back to things too. Like, you know, we don't have to, we could maybe not agree. We could disagree and you know, slap them on if we don't really fight it all, you know? Like,
that's
I would
true.
Give you Akira if you give me Spider-Man or I give you Superman if we give him Spider-Man. Like I'm open to some thoughts. I'm open to like not having to kill one of our babies to get a few more on the list. And we could always prune later.
Oh, that's tricky because now in my head I'm thinking if I gave you Spider-Man and you gave me the pick of Superman and Akira, I don't know which one I would pick.
Ooh, interesting. Mm.
Oh, why'd you have to put me in this spot, man?
Well, I want to throw one out again. We're having a hard, like this is, these are all really hard. Harder. We always think this is going to be an easy episode to do, but it's hard. I'm confounded, Amy. Confounded that you
confounded.
Did not put that you did not put adaptation on your list. Because why? Why would you not put because you like Synecdoche?
Yeah, because I prefer Synecdoche, New York of all of the Charlie Kaufman films. I love that film.
That
so
you
deeply.
are Royal Tenenbaumings that right now. That's what you are doing. Yeah. Okay.
I want to say at this point that Amy can expect me to ride with her on that one. I love Synecdoche.
I do too.
I love that movie. So
I love it too. But is that the perfect Charlie Kaufman movie?
Well, we already have Eternal Sunshine on the list.
Okay.
We do already have Eternal Sunshine.
That is true.
You know, different director, etc. But I mean, it's like that. You know, you kind of do have to pick one of those. I would say.
Oh no, that's tough because I just think Synecdoche is the most ambitiously beautiful film ever made.
And we haven't covered it yet on the show, so we don't have to get quite into that, but
also,
just
Molly is
you.
Saying John Malkovich is being John Malkovich the best.
Well, I prefer being John Malkovich as a Spike Jonze movie over adaptation. Mm. And I think I even prefer her as a Spike Jonze movie over adaptation.
I will drop adaptation. I am letting it go because that argument has let me go. Yeah, I can be swayed that much. I love adaptation. I thought it was great. But let's drop it. And Amy, I've officially let one go off of my other list. All right. Yeah.
Now I feel like whatever I say next will be the one that I officially let go.
No. I have some arguments here too. All right. Well, I will go back into and I'll drop another one into the mix to have us all argue. No one put this on the list. I'm the only one, and I want to hold firm to it. Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Bring out your dead. Bring out your dead.
Here's one.
Ninepence.
I'm not dead.
What?
Nothing. Here's your ninepence.
I'm not dead.
Here. He says he's not dead.
Yes, he is.
I'm not.
He isn't?
Well, he will be soon. He's very ill.
I'm getting better.
No, you're not. You'll be stone dead in a moment.
We don't have a lot of comedy on this list at all. We have some. I mean, that was the argument that we made. Monty Python is arguably one of the most defining comedic voices. I would say this is their best movie.
I would disagree.
Oh, really? You'd say Life of Brian?
Yes, I would say Life of Brian.
Maybe we have
That's
to
the only reason I didn't put it on my list. You know, I'm a gigantic Monty Python fan. I have the Holy Grail literally memorized, but Life of Brian.
Is it better? I always thought Life of Brian was worse.
No. Life of Brian is just as funny, I would say, and it's the coherent movie that they made. It's the one movie that is a sketch film which transcends being a sketch film and truly has a plot from beginning to end. I think every sketch in Life of Brian kind of serves a purpose to make a point. And Holy Grail, it's doing that, but they're just mucking around in Holy Grail. There are bits that are just there because they're funny, which is
fine. Would you argue, though? If you're using your Starship Troopers RoboCop argument, that because Monty Python is more of a hit, a classic, like a one that people go to.
Holy Grail is kind of that. Yeah, for sure. But no, I mean, I maybe that's just a difference between how they're seen in the U.S. versus the U.K.
Yes.
In the U.K., everyone kind of, it's just like assumed, like, well, yeah, Life of Brian's their masterpiece.
Okay. That's really interesting.
It's the one that's on Criterion, too.
Okay.
And Holy Grail never has been, you know, and that's sort of
I have to rewatch it. I haven't rewatched it since I was a kid, so.
Oh, it's wonderful.
All right.
Well, I'll say this, though. I very nearly put Holy Grail on my list. I came very, 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 within like a hairbreadth. I think if I had put on 13 films, the 13th would have been Monty Python. So I am not opposed to putting it on the list with an asterisk and saying we'd also like to watch Life of Brian to be sure. Yeah,
I'd be cool with that, too.
I'm very cool with that and saying that would go either way. I'm very, let's do it. Let's do that. I think that's a good one because I think they need to be represented on this list.
But we did talk about maybe doing movies that are around like religion or the founding of or something next year, maybe. And I think we should earmark Life of Brian to absolutely include because we should check it. Because
I like
that. Would be fun.
Yeah.
All right, Amy.
That'd be fun. And I'd love to do Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yeah, exactly.
Ooh, yeah.
There's so many good ones. Yeah.
Oh, right, and a musical. Okay, well then I'll say this. Blair Witch Project.
The woods around Halloween time is a creepy enough phenomenon.
I don't want to go
cheesy. I want to really avoid any cheese. I want to present this in as straightforward a way as possible, and I think the legend is unsettling enough.
I put this on the list.
I wrestled with this.
You did not put this on the list. I think this film is a landmark. I think this film gets dumped on for starting a trend that was terrible in terms of found footage of horror films. But I think this movie in particular is a masterpiece. I loved that when we revisited it this year, we got to talk about it through the lens of being a film about a bunch of guys working for a female director, which is one of the aspects that I feel like has always gotten overlooked. But that's really what the core of this is. Two guys who don't trust that the woman in charge is leading them in the right direction. And her feeling so stressed out, needing to excel, needing to prove to them that she's got it, that she leads them deeper and deeper and deeper into the woods. I totally missed, I feel like, the really complicated interpersonal subtext that these actors came up with basically on their own, improvising it in the woods. I don't think we've had a film that just revolutionized horror in my lifetime besides this one that like shook up how horror looked, shook up how horror was marketed. Everybody watched, everybody had to have a point of view on it. It rattled them. This is a movie that your grandma would have heard of. Everybody knew about the Blair Witch.
I wrestled with this movie. You don't have to convince me. I'm happy to put it on the list.
because a scare of joy, not terror.
No, because honestly, the truth is like I had those same arguments, and I was like, oh well, how many horrors are we going to put on the list? But I was really killing babies with this one, so I'm very happy to put that on the list.
It's a tough one. I think the Blair Witch Project's a masterpiece, but the horror series we did at the beginning of this season just happened to cover a number of like the greatest horror movies of all time.
Yes.
And I had to make a couple really hard calls.
Well, this actually is a good point because I wrestled with it as well. And Devin and Josh, you both put The Exorcist and Texas Chainsaw Massacre on your list. And those are movies that I was like, I got to put The Exorcist in. I was like, do I have to? I don't know. And then I was like, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, it was on my list. It was off my list. I those three. And I think what I did was I just pulled out of all. I was like, never. I'm not going to put any. Like, I just, it was a hard debate.
I felt exactly the same way. Like, I wound up narrowing itself down to Blair Witch and Texas Chainsaw as just like horror films that, you know, were just completely unlike anything anybody had ever seen in that point. And I felt like for some reason I could only choose one. I don't know why, but when
I think you're right. That was basically my logic too, is like in terms of just being like a truly just like raw, pure terror kind of like horror movie and like indie horror movie. Those kind of have a little bit of the same DNA, although Blair Witch is innovative on the mockumentary angle. But Texas Chainsaw kind of did it first. It is, I don't, probably, maybe scarier? I think it's scarier. And just like in terms of just like pure raw, like, oh God, this movie fucked me up. I don't think anything competes with it.
And raw filmmaking of Texas Chainsaw too. That's the thing. I mean, I know Blair Witch is also, but there's just something, because Texas Chainsaw, the interesting thing about it is it's not that gory. Like when you watch it, things happen off, things are suggested, things aren't really focused on. It's the way the movie is made that's brutal. It looks brutal, and so you're afraid of like the movie. That is so powerful to me.
I would argue this. And Amy, you're gonna get upset with me.
Oh no.
Don't
make me turn into a witch in the woods. I know where you live.
while Blair Witch started this trend. I agree with you. No one has topped it. Paranormal, sure, but it was a trend that really.
Those movies are so boring.
Okay. I'm not. I wasn't saying that. I'm saying that's a close. It actually proves my point. Mm-hmm. No one's come close to it. It's not a trend that took off. So it is a unique film. Whereas Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I mean, you can see the energy of that all the way up until this year with X, T.I. West's movie that's now becoming a new trilogy. I do think that there is something more universal about the effects. Like, I feel like Texas Chainsaw Massacre is a movie that has more effect on cinema than Blair Witch, where Blair Witch is a really well-executed idea and concept and style, but it's singular. Right. And that maybe, and that's an argument. Could you say that's what we should put on there? Or should you say you should put the film that is, like, in the grand scheme of things, if you could only watch one movie, if it's Texas Chainsaw Massacre or Blair Witch, I would give you Texas Chainsaw Massacre only because I think it's more indicative of what horror films are. Whereas Blair Witch is a subversion of it, a breaking of it, like a breaking of the fourth wall. It's sort of like, hey, we know all this stuff that you know, so let's try to mess around with it. So, that's, I mean, that you know, I would argue that Texas Chainsaw Massacre, because that was something I really want to put it on there. And it's like, is it good filmmaking? I think it is. I just think it's too, I don't know. I really like Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
I mean, I think I really admire Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but I really love Blair Witch Project. I think I agree with everything Devin is saying about the way that Texas Chainsaw makes you feel. And to me, Texas Chainsaw feels so important because of that. And yet, if I'm alone in a dark house, Blair Witch is the one that I will lose my mind watching. Like, Blair Witch I find so just like primal, chilling. And it's tough because in a way we're talking about two films that I think are really, really similar and that they were done by outsiders with almost no money. And it was viral word of mouth that made them take off. And these are films that were just made for the dangerous thrill of it all, which is why I guess there isn't room for both of them. And it pains me.
It was only Texas Chainsaw by a hair. I could easily be swayed.
I could too. I love Blair Witch. But there's something, something about the down and dirty Texas Chainsaw that I'll always kind of, I'll just respect it forever. I love that about it.
There's something interesting because, Amy, on your list of picks, I don't mean to reveal it for you, but I think it figures into this conversation. You also picked The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, which is, you know, if we're putting it into horror, and I just looked at our API list. There isn't a lot of horror there. Silence of the Lambs pretty much is the big one.
Which is funny because we talk about so much horror. I mean, it's no spoiler. We're going to be doing another horror film series this year. We love horror films. And that's funny to hear that we have so few because I think that's part of my anxiety this year is I was like, am I going to make this list too horror heavy? Which is why I really only said Blair Witch and then Cabinet, which I feel like is just all on its own in its own category almost.
I know. It's very hard. This is a hard list to find an agreement to because I was going to say, well, would you put Blair? I would put Blair Witch and And Texas Chainsaw Massacre, both on the list in a way, because I think that they're both very different. But then are you disregarding Calgary? But
that's another, that's that, that particular matchup is another one that could be a listener tiebreaker.
Yeah, like I put three up to the, you know, what horror film do you think belongs on the list? I'm very fine with that, because I think that, like, again, I'd be happy with all of it. Those three I'd feel very good about. Any
I mean,
of those
I'll say
three.
This. I love Caligari deeply, but for some reason, having Night of the Hunter on this list makes it a little easier for me to say goodbye to Caligari if we have to, mm-hmm. because at yeah. least that type of expressionism is represented on this list. And I will probably continue to be throwing like some of my favorite silent films, especially some of my favorite German films at this list, because there's a world of like Fritz Lang we still need to like get into, like M and stuff.
Yeah.
So I can put Caligari aside since we haven't even done like Metropolis. I mean, my God, this is like one of my favorite decades. But I do agree we should probably put Blair Witch and Texas Chainsaw against each other. Although I do worry because I feel like Blair Witch is still in that arc of its history where it's considered a dumb joke and a meme and the girl with snot out of her face. And I do feel like the internet won't be fair to it unless they go back and actually rewatch that movie.
Mm-hmm. But well, now
life yeah. isn't fair. So who am I to say?
Well, as we are talking about not fair, this is going to be a hard one for me to argue, but I've been talking about this, stumping for this since season one. Jackass. The Jackass movies, everything that you said about Blair Witch, I could also easily take over to Jackass and saying, like, here's something that has never been done before or has been done. It's an evolution. We went from Buster Keaton and Charlie Chaplin. I mean, who were making films, but really, I mean, when you look at some of the Buster Keaton stuff, it's stunts, right? It's stunts. And it's like, here is something that not only captures the imagination, but every time it comes out over the last 20 years, it continues to get this energy and excitement. It's something so uniquely different. No one else has done it. Well, I think people have tried to do it, but this is something that I see the arguments. Well, it's not really a film, but it did come out in a theater. It's a great theater film. Like it is a movie that like, you could watch. And in many ways, my argument sometimes with silent movies are, sometimes the shorts are better than the full pieces. It's like, because I felt like the full pieces were kind of drooping in the middle. And this is all a bunch of shorts. I mean, it's just a bunch of funny, dumb stunts. There's not a plot. There's no, you know, there is something about those movies that I think is incredibly special. And we're looking at diversity across the board of like, what is possible with cinema, right? Like if we're opening that, it's not even like the greatest movies. It's like, show me like the widest palette of color choices I could have, you know, to paint a picture. And it's like, I think you got to put Jackass on there. I don't think there's anything that we've done that's close to that, to be like, that's a movie that came out in the theater and was giant. It was a hit, and it was a hit again, and it was a hit again, you know, and it just, there is something about that franchise that I think is worthy of saying, wow, they took silent films and they in a way, I mean, I know it's like not truly, but it is in a way, it's paying homage. It's that same idea, like, oh, like that visceral reaction.
I mean, it's almost like those somewhat hyped up stories of people going into the movie theater, seeing a train coming at them and losing their
yes,
mind in
I was
1896.
Thinking about that. Yeah.
It's because you're just like, what are they doing in cinema? That can't be possible. I'm very empathetic to this argument because I deeply also love the Jackass franchise, but I mean, which one would we put on? Because Jackass 1, I think, isn't either of our personal favorites.
No, I know. I was kind of thinking of them as we've put packets on, right? I think we've put like the
yeah,
all
we have
of
the Star Wars trilogy.
The Star
yeah.
Wars trilogy, the Lord of the Rings trilogy are yeah. right, list is single right.
And okay. the Godfather trilogy, actually.
Yeah.
Okay, so if we packetize them.
Yeah, if we just say the Jackass films.
The Jackasses. The Jackasseries.
Yeah, the Jackasseries.
Jackasswa.
Because there's something about, like, I will just say, in all my time and seeing film, you know, from a kid to now, that is truly the most visceral and fun experience I have had in a theater. Like, it is hands down wonderful. Like, it is... I don't know. I just never had seen anything like it. And it is real. You know, I don't know. There is something about it. I know it's like, it's not an elevated choice. It's not a cool, like, it's not like a, it's not a cinephile choice. It probably won't be on anyone else's list. But I also feel like you can't deny what it is and what it captures about our society. I mean, we are a society that, and by the way, I think culturally, people love pranks. People like, these are pranks on themselves, you know, for the most part. You know, but I don't know. There's something about it.
For like, for pranks or for even just for stunts, it kind of occupies a similar spot in my head to like Supercop or the other two police story movies. If it's like, that's what it makes me think of, is the experience of watching a Jackie Chan movie in the theaters where you're like, oh, he is about to die if this doesn't go well.
Yeah.
There's something about that that is super thrilling and is, like you say, fundamental to movies, you know, because of people like Buster Keaton and Harold Lloyd doing that stuff back at the time. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't argue against it. I would actually love the idea of us having a list that has, you know, whatever, Do the Right Thing, Godfather 2, and Jackass.
Yeah.
Like, that pleases me.
Something's got to stand up for represent slapstick. But I don't know. I mean, there are those kind of death-defying stunts, but I do feel like there are maybe other ones we haven't covered.
Because
yet.
I mean, you'll talk about Buster Keaton and go like, oh well, he's doing that train sequence. Like, you talk about, like, a lot of the times when you talk about these great pieces, you're talking about great pieces. Charlie Chaplin's different, but like, you're talking about stunts, and there is something about these are stunt, like these are amazing stunts. There's no CGI. There's nothing there. It's just an interesting argument to represent the popular choice too, every now and then. Like, what is, you know, we want to be a list. I'm not arguing for Fast and Furious right now, but I don't think I ever would, you know, but and I would, same thing with like the Avengers and stuff like that. I love those movies. I do love those movies. I don't think they are as defining. Like popcorn movies, you know, I don't think they're as defining as that. Like, I think I have a good enough line to understand, like, why, yes, I love Crank, but I don't think that Crank belongs on this list, you know?
I mean, not when Crank 2 is right there.
I know. I was already regretting it as I said it.
All of us at the same time.
Yeah.
Comparing Jackass to Buster Keaton or Jackie Chan, there is a little bit of a distinction of, like, with those films or those guys, it's like, wow, how did they do that? And with Jackass, it's not quite that. It's more like, why did they do that? Or like,
it's sort of like, I think the difference is Jackie Chan's trying to save somebody who's captured and he's trying to get to the train. So he jumps onto a helicopter here. Like, if Johnny Knoxville jumped onto a helicopter and flew over a city, you'd be like, what is he doing? It's so stupid. But you just say like, oh, well, it's in the service of this, like, plot. Like, I mean, it's like, it means more, like, you know what I'm saying? It's like, yeah, it is the same thing. It's like,
that's kind of what I was saying. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, she's jumping, Michelle Yeoh is jumping a motorcycle onto a moving train. If Steve-O was doing that, you'd be like, you fucking idiot. But because the movie you're doing is so cool. It's like, what's the difference? It's still dumb stunts. It's like, they are doing things that are not smart. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like it's, they, but it is, it's, it is, it's acrobatic, it's functional. I would argue also, if we're talking about an international list, which I know it's hard to say, this, you put those Jackass movies on, that's gonna go all over the world. That no one, everyone gets what's going on with Jackass. There is no, you don't need language to understand Jackass.
Like, the aliens might get it.
I not that we have to make every decision like this, but it is,
no,
to have a universal, a truly universal experience. Like, everyone could watch that. And I've shown bits to my kids of Jackass, like, you know, not all of it, obviously, but like little things. And it's like, it is, it can capture a kid and capture an old people and the person. And I think it's also one of those things where people don't get too bent out of shape when they see dicks and stuff like that too in these movies. It's like, you know, you could watch somebody older, like, oh, but like there is still like, oh, there is that. Like, that is like, there's a fun to it. And they are bringing a fun to it. It's not mean-spirited, like they're trying to hurt each other. They're doing it to themselves. They're volunteering for it. They are, you know, I don't know. There's something about it.
I think you may have to offer Amy a trade.
All right.
I think.
You may have to offer me two.
Two.
One, This conversation is reminding me that I am dissatisfied with the one Buster Keaton that we have on this list, the mm-hmm. general, mm-hmm. because that is my least favorite Buster Keaton of his like big ones. And you're reminding me that we should do at least one more Buster Keaton to see if we can swap the general off okay. with something else. So that's my first horse trade. Do you agree?
Happy to swap off the general.
Okay, good. My second
one is... in exchange for maybe doing a stunt-based yeah, series, yeah, yeah, which yeah, I think yeah, would be really yeah. cool to do.
Get yeah. Hooper in there.
I mean, yeah. I'd love to do another like Jackie Chan, see if we could get a Jackie Chan
definitely.
In there.
Definitely, yeah.
My second trade is this. Are we going to be the podcast that in the course of 5 minutes is going to say, the Jackass films are going on the list, but my last pick that you did not vote for, Jane Campion's The Piano, is not. Is this the hill you want to die on?
Yep.
What?
Absolutely.
You're Knoxville-ing this straight show now. You're just there for the pain.
By the way, I will say this. I wrestled with The Piano as well. I think it's a beautiful movie. I really did enjoy it. But it I know you really like it. I don't
wow,
know one
your
of the best
silence
movies.
Speaks volumes, just like Holly Hunter. Wow.
Nice.
I mean, I love this movie as like a film about like the most confounding female protagonist who just exists to be there in her own world. Like she is who she is. Nobody can understand her. It's a whole film about people just trying to get inside this woman's head and failing, and she just won't do it. Her absolute like maddening stubbornness that I think kind of parallels Jane Campion herself and her whole career. I think The Piano is so, so, so much better than The Power of the Dog, which won the Oscar this year. And she's a tough old lady who made a tough film about another tough lady. And I adore this movie. And I thought it was really beautiful and sexy and romantic. And you get Harvey Keitel as like a sexy lead. You're going to tell me that you don't want sexy Keitel on this list?
Well, wait until you get Bad Lieutenant.
Oh.
That's the sexiest. I'm not against putting it on the list. I'll put it on the list. I'll put
you
it on
will?
The list.
You will. You're going to give me my full horse.
I like the idea of putting those both on at the same
time. Yeah, at the same time. Jackass and the Piano together?
Yes.
Yes.
I love that.
Are we going to combine them to the Jackass Pianery or something? Well,
and then, you know, I think that, like, look.
Are you going to say, oh, I mistyped penis and I accidentally wrote the piano?
The penis gets caught in the piano. All right, so I'll give you that. I'll give you that because I can't argue against it. And I'm looking at Jane Campion's other films, and there's no other one that's going to get on there. And I do think that she should be represented. And I think that movie is a big movie. And I really did enjoy it. But I didn't love it as much as you, but you also converted me. That was a conversation where you converted me to the punk rock nature of it.
Yeah.
I'll give you that. All right. So then my final one, that we have not discussed yet. And before we discuss the final one that I have on my list, I want to talk about the one that, both Devin and Josh have on their list that I think is interesting. Two, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. There are two more we both agreed on.
Yeah. RRR. RRR was very much a movie that I wanted to put on this list, but I used the Amy litmus test of saying, I got to give it a little bit more time. Just because I am blown away, I loved it, but it's the same reason why we didn't put Get Out on this list.
Right.
It was just sort of like, just give it a beat. Give it a beat. I'm happy to give it a beat. I don't think I'll go away from... Every reason why you put it on the list is exactly why I want it on the list, but I was just giving it a beat. That was my issue.
I had that same litmus test in mind, but I also thought about the other litmus test we're talking about, which is representation. The fact we have no Indian films on this list. I'm not saying this is the definitive Bollywood film by any means necessarily. I'm not nearly enough of an expert on Indian films to say that. But in terms of something that feels like it is truly pushing just the action blockbuster forward in ways I've never seen, I think it really scores on that count. It is the most absolutely the most thrilling movie I've seen in theaters this year. It's probably going to be my favorite movie of 2022. There's still some big heavy hitters coming next, but I'm okay taking my big swing here. This was my big swing. I'm putting it here. Maybe it'll look dumb in a year or two, but I feel really good about having it on the list.
Yeah,
I too was concerned about recency bias, etc., and I took the steps to watch it a second time just to double check. And no, I was right. It is a banger. That movie is fantastic.
I love it.
There's
I'm happy to
no element I don't love.
I'm happy to throw it on the list. I just wanted to give it that. The reason why we didn't put Get Out on the list was very similar. So I wanted to And I think Get Out still holds up. I also think Get Out, you know, is great. I love Nope very much, but...
I still don't think Get Out is that great.
All right, yes. Oh, yeah. But, all right, let's not worry about Get Out, though. All right, yeah, sorry.
In terms of that one of RRR, I was thinking about it and thinking about, kind of what Josh said, will this look silly in 10 years, like to have been so like into it? And I just don't think it is. Like, it's the kind of movie I can picture like a Predator or like a Lethal Weapon 2, that if you found it on TV at any point in that runtime, you would watch all of the rest of it. And I think that's
true. It's definitely my favorite film of the year so far. Yeah.
And I watched two other S.S. Rajamouli movies just to kind of check what the rest of his filmography was like. I watched both of the Bahubali movies, which are excellent. RRR is in another category, even than those excellent movies. I feel pretty confident saying this is a great film that has traveled more than other Tollywood or Bollywood movies.
We're talking about an amazing experience in the cinema. I haven't seen it in the cinema, but I've only seen videos of people experiencing it in the cinema, and it looks amazing.
It's amazing in the cinema. I cannot wait to see the Bahubalis on the big screen in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, I am also nervous about recency bias, about this one in particular, but then I also am aware that there is a film that came out this year that I am going to make an extraordinarily strong argument should just immediately be on the list. And that's Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Ooh.
I mean, between those two, as much as I love RRR, it is Everything Everywhere. Wow. These titles are so repetitive, even in their own titling name. But that said, I love you, Devin. I love you, Josh. If you, as producer engineer brains, wish to say this is our consensus pick and we insist it is on the list, I love you and I would give you that.
There's a very strong reason I'm not going to use this one for that. And
I know where you're going to
below this on the list.
Yeah, I agree, Devin.
All right, really? Well, the one that we're talking about that you both put on the list that we did not put on the list, Fargo.
Sir. You have no call to get snippy with me. I'm just doing my job here.
I'm not arguing here. I'm cooperating. We're doing all we can.
Yep. Yeah. Look, I said this last year when we were talking about Raising Arizona, that I did not put Raising Arizona on my list as much as I love that movie. I love that movie, but I knew at some point we were going to cover Fargo. And the Coen brothers are probably only getting one slot because they know we're on this list, because they know we are saving those two slots for like the Spielbergs and the Kubricks of the world. And I could make a case for the Coen brothers eventually having two, but assuming that they're just going to have one slot, assuming that there's going to be one Coen brothers movie that 100% sums up everything that they do well in a single film, which is so hard considering like the breadth of the genres they've covered and the tones that they're masters of. Fargo has everything. It's an expertly told crime story. It has so much comedy in it. It kind of captures their prankster side in the way they present it as a true story. It has some of their best defined characters, their best defined performances. It's the most iconic movie. It was on the original AFI list. It was Best Picture nominated. It's kind of the whole package.
And to bring it back, that's the Grand Budapest argument that I was asking to table, because I think, look, Raising Arizona is spectacular. I mean, like Josh says, I love pretty much, I'm interested in all of their movies. I love probably 10 of them, you know, to that degree. They're so good. But Fargo is the kind of movie that you cannot make unless you've already gone through Raising Arizona, Miller's Crossing, Barton Fink, Hudsucker Proxy. You've made all these other tones, and now you have this one movie that makes space throughout it for all these little tones to exist in their own little spot. I truly think it is the one Coens to rule them all. It's the one that brings together all the things that they do into one package.
All right, you swayed me. I was going to have this debate on here anyway in my mind because I was wrestling with it. I'm very happy to swap.
I will say that Raising Arizona is still my favorite of these two, but the tribe has spoken.
All right.
So wait, to be clear, you are picking Fargo over using your combined powers for RRR?
Mm-hmm. I think it's the right thing to do in terms of the recency bias. I want to make sure everyone knows that I think RRR is worthy of this list, and we may revisit. We may come back to it next year and go, you know what, after a year or after two, I think we should have put that one on the list. Lodging it here is good enough for me. I want to use my veto in this spot to say Fargo's the one for the Coens.
All right.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
I think just out of length, and passion for myself, I'm going to take my last vote out of the mix because I was wrestling with putting it on, and it is Heat.
Yeah.
I thought Heat should be on this list, and I was like, maybe a Michael Mann movie should be on this list. And everything we've talked about, is it the best Michael Mann? Sure. Is it the best? You know, I was like, but, you know, Cops and Robbers. A lot of Cops and Robbers. It's a great movie. It's a beautiful movie. I really like it. I feel like I can't make an argument that I think I was in a Heat hole. We just talked about it. We saw it. I really loved it. And I was like, God damn it. I'll put it on the list. But I don't feel strongly enough. I know, Devin, you agreed with me. I really like it. I just don't know. I just don't know if it's...
I think of its type, it's the best one of those. But right. I wouldn't personally push any harder than that to get it on the list into space. I think it is probably the best Cops and Robbers movie made in maybe even in my lifetime. I don't know, because you know, Amy and I are both a little bit, you know, not interested in Goodfellas. So like, if you're looking for a crime sort of film, Heat sort of does it for me. But there are,
and we're talking
movies.
About Dark Knight that is basically doing like a little bit of an homage to Heat.
Yeah. That's how I felt. I didn't think I needed both Heat and Dark Knight.
Yeah.
That's true.
I mean, we also have a lot of Robert De Niro representation
certainly.
On this list.
Maybe not enough Kilmer, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, let me ask you guys this. How would you feel if sometime we do my personal favorite, Michael Mann, which is Last of the Mohicans?
Ooh, I do love that one.
I'm
or
very
thief.
Intrigued by that.
Or Thief. I'm the guy who loves Miami Vice, too. I love Miami Vice. That is an underrated one.
I can't get behind Colin Farrell scowling on a jet ski.
I completely understand it. It's just there's some vibe to that movie in a Once Upon a Time in Hollywood kind of way, where the vibe just kind of overpowers everything. You're just like, I just like living in this movie. This is a good one.
I got to stick it for The Insider, too, of just like an incredible
movie.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All right, great.
Insider.
So Michael Mann will revisit. Let's just talk about what we like right now. Right now, it is The Matrix, Night of the Hunter, Boogie Nights, The Dark Knight, The Grand Budapest Hotel, Grease. We're going to let you decide between Starship Troopers and RoboCop. We'll let you decide between a Blair Witch and Texas Chainsaw Massacre. We've all agreed to replace Raising Arizona with Fargo. We are going to reconsider RRR at a later time. And The Piano and Jackass are on our list, which leaves us with our final debate of Superman and Spider-Man and Akira.
And there's one more you forgot, Paul, which is I do have Holy Grail on the list with an asterisk in case we replace it with another Python later.
And I think we should.
Great. Yeah. All right, great. I agree with that. That's good. So I don't know if we're going to come to a consensus. We really hashed out Spider-Man and Superman. I'm fine to put them both on the list.
Yeah.
And then prune. You know,
I don't mind that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're different enough. And in terms of they're innovating different things, I don't think it's I don't think it's out of hand to put both on right now. And then, you know, the audience will tell us if they're like, what are you talking about? That's crazy.
Yes.
You know? Yeah.
I could put them on in prune. Although actually, now that I'm even talking about it, I'm already thinking about all of the other types of films we don't have on this list. And maybe I could let Superman go, but that hurts.
Sure.
But can I just tell you right now, we have right now 0 animated films on our list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a gauntlet for the next season.
Of course.
It kind of is. Yeah.
So I think for that alone, Spider-Man should get on this list at one point, you know. I can't believe we don't have a Pixar movie on there or anything. Or,
Amy, I'll
you
come
know,
with
Miyazaki.
You. If you want to fold on that one and go Spider-Verse, I'll agree.
All right, we'll fold. That's what Superman himself might do.
It really is.
All right. I like it. All right, so we've made some very big decisions. Let us know what you're thinking. Did we miss something? I think I'd be remiss if I didn't talk briefly about Paddington 2, which is a movie that I think should be on this list. I didn't put it in my top 12 because I talked myself out of it because I felt like it was going to be an uphill battle. But if you feel that Paddington has been, I don't think that you do, though, because based on the response to Paddington, people didn't feel like it belonged on the list, so I wasn't going to go down. I wasn't going to go down fighting that hard for
Devin
it.
Devin
really
is the only one of us four who put it on the list. He also put Blade on the list. Maybe, Devin, would you like to take this moment to honor your fallen soldiers?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I'm very realistic about my love of Blade, right? Like, is it a perfect movie? No. Is it a perfect movie? Yes. Yes, it is.
Yeah, I agree with that.
It's a movie that when I first saw it, our engineer Ryan was working at the movie theater in Boulder. And so during the day when I didn't have to work, this was when I was still working at Blockbuster, I would go over there and just go in and see whatever movie. And I went and saw Blade in the theater, I think 4 times, maybe 5. Because what else do you want a movie to do? I remember sitting there in the theater going like, this is exactly it. Like, it's a great time. Wesley Snipes is so lithe and fun and kind of a weird. He plays it a little weird and quirky, and that's so engaging. Stephen Dorff is like one of the best villains in any of the heroes and villains movies I think that we did. And his hair is spectacular. Blade musically captures what it felt like in 1997, 8, whatever it was, to be like, God, this is the future. Look at this blood rave. This is what we're all going to be doing in 4 years. We're all going to be at blood raves. You know, it had an edge to it that was so of the time. And every time I come back to it, I'm like, this is a great movie. This is what I want an action movie to do for me. But I am realistic. It is Blade. You know, pour one out for Blade. I love you, Blade. Paddington 2. I don't even know how to even, you know, what would be the... what's the negative of Paddington 2? Paddington 2
I know.
It's the most fun you can maybe have, and everyone liked it. I agree with you, Paul, that I didn't have it on my first draft of the list because kind of the response of the audience sort of softened me on it in a weird way. I was like, oh, maybe it isn't that good. And then it was just on, and I saw, like, you know, the middle 45 minutes, and I'm like, no, damn it. Paddington 2 is excellent. This is
I love it too. I know.
It's one of the best family movies of the past like 10 years. It's so good.
I agree.
But, you know, I'm not going to fight too hard about it. I want it noted that I really think that movie is fantastic.
I do too. Well, yeah. I mean, there's so many movies, and I was surprised to see that on your list, Devin, Wallace and Gromit was not there.
Well, yes. Now, look, I love it. Maybe this is a similar thing, that the audience response softened me a little bit, where I was kind of like, all right, I mean, we could maybe do some other Aardmans if you guys weren't feeling that one so much. I adore that movie. I think it's jokes front to back. It's one of the funniest movies since, like, Airplane, in terms of how many jokes are in every single scene, in the background, things that are said, stuff people are wearing. It's just joke, joke, joke. But I'm open to the idea of looking at, like, Shaun the Sheep in particular, which I think is a spectacular movie, the first one in particular. Or any of the other Aardmans. They have multiple movies that I would be into. It just, when it push came to shove, I was like, I didn't really want to push too hard on that one, even though I love it.
That's beautiful. And Josh, would you like to say some words to your departed pick, The Shining?
There was just one more that nobody's talked about. And look, The Shining is maybe my favorite horror movie ever made. I've seen it like 10 times. It is one of those that obviously could go down the Rube 237 rabbit hole and just marinated its mysteries and watch documentaries and weird YouTube videos about it forever. The hard thing about this movie, obviously, is not just we've had so many banger horror movies already, but also the Kubrick slots are really tough to replace because we're not going to have this and Strangelove and 2001. I ultimately decided I could put it over Strangelove just because I feel like Strangelove has faded a little bit in my mind. It's maybe gotten to the point where it's starting to feel like it's showing its age a little bit, as much as it seemed like it really was staying ageless forever. I think if I'm picking a movie to like put on and watch tonight, I'm picking The Shining every time. But it's not an easy call by any means, and it's not one I'm going to like fight super, super hard for. But yeah, it's there's no other movie like it.
That's beautiful. And I wonder if we have a Verhoeven satire on this list, would it mean we'll be able
to
get...
That's part of what I was thinking. I was also thinking, if we've got Starship Troopers, I don't know if we need Dr. Strangelove, as weird as it is to compare those two movies.
Hey. Take it easy.
Wow.
Now, I will also say, and I've said this behind the scenes multiple times, there are other Kubricks I would love us to consider just in general, and specifically Barry Lyndon is a pet love of mine that I hadn't seen until recently, and now I really think it's his, I hate to say masterpiece, but it's the way that it's made and how funny it is in the way that it's funny is so interesting and unique to his filmography. I'd love us to look at that. Shining is awesome.
It is awesome.
He made a couple good movies. I think that's fair to say.
It's true.
Well, that's why we've had that slot for him to do some more. But anyway, we have 2001 on the list. We have another spot open. This is a big debating episode. I know that people have a lot of theories and thoughts, and there are movies that we wanted to put on. And it's hard when you do a bunch of bangers like we did this year. This list gets harder and harder to kind of maintain. But wait, I think we added about 10 or 12 because we took, we replaced, we swapped a little bit.
Yeah, we are losing 3 and adding 13, pending a couple of fan votes. So it's going to be, we're adding exactly 10 entries this year.
All right, there we go.
I feel solid.
I have one last question, which is that in looking at the current list, are there any that in just scanning through, either of you would say, do we want to, is that still worthy of its spot? I wonder if there's...
I had a couple thoughts about it that I'll throw out there. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would maybe take off 12 Angry Men. I think it's a great movie. But I think it's a great movie. Yeah. But I also feel like there are other movies I think that can compete within that world. I think that that's a... I really love that movie. But I'm just looking through very simply and going like, okay, like what are... Is that a defining film? Is that like something that... is perfection.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know if it is. And
I'm actually surprisingly comfortable with that. And weirdly, the one that I'm staring at now, Hostily, it's surprising me that I'm doing this, is Duck Soup.
Interesting. Interesting.
But I think that's just because we've been talking about when we did this original cull, we had to cull so many Charlie Chaplins. There are like, what, 3-4 Charlie Chaplins on this list. We finally...
And 3 Marx Brothers, too.
And 3 Marx Brothers.
I think there were 2 Marx Brothers.
It was Night at the Opera and this.
Okay.
Yeah, and we got it down to one of each. We got it down to Modern Times for Chaplin, which I feel very strongly is my favorite of his. And then we put Duck Soup on this list, even though, that's right, we got into a fight because I liked Night at the Opera. But honestly, I always agree with you that we need more comedy, and I don't know if the comedy we need is Duck Soup. Like, kid, I'm open to a world where we kill this. Everybody's glaring at me, dude. Just put on your little mustaches and twiddle them at me. Bunch of grouchos over here. Sorry.
I think that Duck Soup is maybe the holy grail to Life of Brian, but I also agree. I don't know. I don't want to take one off unless we have another Marx Brothers on there.
No, I think
Marx
Brothers are.
So you feel like we have to have a Marx Brothers? You feel adamant?
Yes,
that there's
absolutely.
A Marx Brothers?
I do feel like there has to be a Marx Brothers. Especially in American film, they are a state. Like they are. I think when you look at the lexicon of film, they are definitely in that world.
Foundational,
yes.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, I don't want to get into another thing like when Quentin Tarantino yelled at me for not appreciating W.C. Fields.
Funny that you bring that up, because I will say, and maybe this is a preview for the end of next year, right? The end of very next season when we get there. The one I'm looking at on this list is Mr. Pulp Fiction, because I will say, in terms of horse trading, looking ahead to the future, I in my heart would be willing to trade away quite a few movies that I love deeply for the possibility for Jackie Brown to be the film that goes into
space. I'm right with you.
You know what I'm saying? Listeners know that that's in the background. I'm moving pieces trying to make that happen.
I also would...
There are a couple of cuties I could put in there.
Yeah, there's a few.
Exactly.
I'm open to that. And I might even say that we rewatched Death Proof in the dark days of quarantine. That movie is so good. And if anybody else had made it, it would be their best film. But because it's him, it's his last film in the public discourse. That movie is amazing. I think I actually prefer it to Inglourious Basterds. I think it's so fun.
Huh. I know that I'm going to be taking one parting shot at Amy before we finish this episode. But I would say Intolerance also would be a movie that I would maybe consider. I know from the historical point of view and it's all this sort of stuff. But I'm also like, when I look at that list, I'm like, the only reason why it's there is because of the spectacle of it and how big it is. Like I would put the Cabinet of Dr. Caligari there over Intolerance, just in the sense of like, I'm not saying like, oh, it's old, I don't like it. It just like, it was spectacular. But I'm also like, I don't know if I'm like, it it's like spectacle over substance to me. I feel like,
it's got the substance. That's hard for me to go there because, I mean, to me, Caligari is also a film from the 20s. Like, Intolerance is the only film we have up here from the 19-teens. Right. The entire first full decade of cinema that always gets overlooked.
I mean, and that's...
Because we go straight to, like, deco and everything. And, like, I know. It pains me to cut out the whole first important decade of film history. And
I think you're right. I'm just saying it. I'm not arguing it more than... Every now and then I look at a list and I go, oh, am I putting that on? And I think we all avoided that with Exorcist, even though Devin and Josh mm-hmm. picked Exorcist. But I think it's like the idea of like, we're not just making the simple choices. And I look at that one and I go, well, that's a simple choice. Only because it's like, well, it fits a bunch of blocks. It's the first decade of film. It's so gigantic. But is it like, is it a movie that you would want to like rewatch? And maybe teach their own. But I do think it's important to be on there.
I kind of feel like maybe we're keeping Vertigo on this list just because it's got so much of those like number one top movie of all time plot. Well, is it really the Hitchcock?
I mean, it's because of me specifically. I was the one who pushed in the original. I made that my kind of card where I'm like, come on, you guys, please don't take this away from me. It was my personal request. No. Hey, and honestly, in scrolling through this and looking at it, I was like, yeah, because the Hitchcock as a, God, almost as a genre, because there's so many movies within, he made whatever, 40, 50, maybe even more. There's so many in there to look at. I do still think Vertigo, the colors of it, the texture,
realizing that we took off Psycho to keep Vertigo. I don't know if I can back it.
We kept Rear Window on, so at least there's
that. Oh, that's right. We do still have Rear Window on.
We have two.
Yeah, I'm very proud we took off Psycho. I feel like that was the right call.
Yeah.
Because who cares about the whole Last Vera Miles half? Absolutely nobody on earth until the last 5 minutes. Okay.
I like Vera Miles a lot. I'm a big Vera Miles
fan. Against her. It's just boring.
It's less interesting, for sure. Yeah. And that's why I didn't fight it at the time, too. It's like, you can't argue that the second half holds up to that first half. There's no way.
Exactly. And I feel like if a whole second half of a movie is a tanker, what are we going to do with it?
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, look, we've got three Jackass movies on this list.
Four.
Oh, that's right. Of course there's four. So now you're telling me every second of all four of them holds up?
Well, we're counting them as a trilogy. We're saying that the sum of its parts. We're saying that
quadrilogy?
Quadrilogy?
Well, because I think the idea is that, like, Lord of the Rings is the trilogy is better than the individual movies. Star Wars, the trilogy is better than the individual movie.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, not like, I think that these things should be viewed together as a collective piece. And I think Jackass should be viewed together as a collective piece. That's all I'm making that argument about.
Nah, I agree with you.
All right, so we've made some decisions. It's all there. You can go to unspooledpodcast.com, unspooledpodcast.com to see the list as it exists. Tell us what you want on, off. You have some decisions to make now. We'll let you know at the beginning of our next series. And Amy, you want to tell everybody what our next series is going to be about?
Well, is there a chill in the air? Because we are going back to Horror Baby. And I have to say, we've been already kicking on a little bit the films that we think we might want to cover. And I immediately was like, man, haven't we done all the good horror? Look at all the bangers we didn't even put on the list from this year that we covered that I love. And as we are coming up with possibles, I was like, oh, this well is so deep and so wonderful. And I'm excited to talk about, I think I made you guys initially a list of like 25 films again. So here we go, trying to figure out what to do. It's always so painful. And that, I guess, that is in keeping with horror season. It should hurt a little bit.
Why don't we start it off with a new classic that has a star that everyone's talking about for her new movie, for all maybe the wrong reasons. I have not seen this movie. And I'm very excited. Yeah, I've never seen this movie. It is Ari Aster's Midsommar.
Oh, you haven't seen this movie?
Nope.
How did you not see this movie?
It seemed too scary, and then I forgot about it.
I love that sentence.
Yeah.
Well, then, I'm excited to kick off horror season with a seasonal horror film, a season of the sweets.
I'll be honest, Amy, the Hereditary fucked me up too much that I really was like, I don't want to do that again to myself. So I've held back, and now I'm excited to be forced forward.
Well, I like fucking you up, so let's do it.
All right, great. So take a listen to the trailer.
Christian says that you've got some special thing planned.
Yeah, it's like a crazy 9-day festival. It only happens every 90 years.
Hi. Hello. Theodore. You can't speak. You can't move. But this opens you up to the influence. And it breaks down your defenses.
And Somar can be rented wherever you want to get your films, but you can also check out all these amazing apps that your local public library has, whether it's Hoopla. I think there's another one called like Canopy. Great apps where you can rent movies for free from your local public library. Use this amazing resource, support your local public library, and you can support us by checking out some of our Unspooled t-shirts at tpublic.com. We have a brand new shirt that is a caricature of Al Pacino saying, "She's got a great podcast," and it's available right there. A big thank you to our producers for not only their weekly work, but for all of their contributions today. Josh Richmond and Devin Bryant.
What an amazing season, guys. Congratulations. Holy cow.
Amazing season. Also, a shout out to our producer, Molly Reynolds, our engineer, Ryan Connor, and of course, our brand new intern, CC Clark. Thank you so much for being here. Welcome, and we will see you next week, where I will be decidedly fucked up.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.